It's going to be a good lesson, isn't it? Just for the record, Dan told me he didn't know that song. And then, in great admiration to him, he sight read it. And did a really good job, but I thought, you know, I hate for somebody to put me on the spot and ask me to do something that I'm not prepared to do or sing a song that I'm not, so I'll let him come up and lead that song at the proper time here. Just, I'm enjoying reading through Psalms in my daily Bible reading right now, and I don't know if you're quite there. I'm a little ahead, and so I don't know what the in the chronological Bible, I don't know exactly where you are as per today's date, but I hope that you're enjoying reading also. F. Lagarde Smith's The Daily Bible in Chronological Order has been a real blessing to me, and I've enjoyed using it for a number of reasons, but one of the things is, and I've had people over the years come to me and say, hey, do you know any good book that I can go to teach Proverbs or Psalms? And those are two pretty tough ones. Proverbs particularly, because how do you outline Proverbs? And this chronological Bible has arranged the Psalms and the Proverbs in something of a topical order. And so there are Psalms that are put together with similar themes, and there are Proverbs that teach similar things that are put together. And so, to be real honest with you, particularly for Proverbs, that's about the best that I know that you can go to put them together in a kind of a topically arranged order. And you tend to get a little fuller picture of the writer's perspective on a particular topic. And as you read, if you're reading using that particular Bible, the first groupings of Psalms has a little intro with the gray background. You know what I'm talking about? And it's entitled Psalms of the Troubled Soul. And a part of the introduction says, these Psalms speak to anyone who's ever known persecution for righteousness, or anyone who feels betrayed or alone in the midst of a hostile world. And as you read through those Psalms, it does that. I dare say that at least to some degree or other, all of us have felt this to some degree in our lives at some time, that we have felt alone. We have wondered, why, God, did these evil people in the world, why do they seem to be doing so well when there are some really, really good people who are trying to serve you who are struggling with really difficulties in their life? And how, God, can you allow such injustice to continue? Why don't you just come down here and mop this mess up? And David, with a lot better words than I just use, asks that question and seeks that answer repeatedly in the Psalms. And because of this topical arrangement, there are two Psalms that are side by side on a page that are not normally side by side on a page. And so as I was reading through, something jumped out at me, because I just finished reading one Psalm and thinking about that and read this other Psalm, and something struck me at the end of both of them that I'd like to share with you. And I will call this lesson God's Motivation. And it will address at least what to me is something of a mystery of why some people in this life are happy and secure in their relationship with God, and others are constantly distressed and struggle with their relationship to God and seem so distant from God. And it has to do with, it occurs to me, that these two Psalms set in contrast point out that God's attitude toward us is a response of our attitude toward Him. And I would like for you to be turning to Psalm 91 and Psalm 95, and we're going to be looking at those. We'll look at 95 first, and I brought my topical Bible with me tonight so that I could have them on the same page and opposed to one another on the same opening here. One of these responses about things that God's motivation is a positive one and one's a negative one. And since I would prefer to end on the positive one, then I'll start with the negative one. And so in Psalm 95. And in this psalm, God will say to this entire nation, the first group, in Psalm 95:11, they shall never enter my rest. And probably just from that statement, many of you who are familiar with the Old Testament know who it was he was talking to and what he was talking about. But as you look at historically and at this psalm and see what there was in these people that caused God to make such an oath, he will say that I was angry with this generation for 40 years. God held that anger, he said, for 40 years. And in my anger, I made an oath. And you know, there's some really interesting things in the Old Testament about oaths. It's really pretty plain as you go through the Old Testament that when you make an oath to God, regardless of the circumstances, you better live up to it. There are some illustrations in the Old Testament where people decided not to and they paid very dearly. And as I read through that, it occurred to me, and I can remember thinking, you know, if I were living back then, I just wouldn't make an oath to God. Because what if I made an oath and I didn't live up to it? But there are also encouragements to make oaths to God, to make promises to God. And I've run across several of those in the Old Testament. And so it's not, you know, that you just take the safest route and say, well, hey, I'll never say that I'll do this. And if I never say it, then I'll never break that oath. God wanted his people to make promises. And there were times when people would say, God, if you'll do this, then I'll do this. And you can see Jacob and Joseph and numbers of others of our predecessors who made a deal with God. They made a bargain with God. If you'll do this for me, then I'll do this for the rest of my life, or I'll do this. And they tried to live up to those oaths, and God honored them in their lives. But what was it that God saw in these people that caused him to make such an angry oath? Look at verse 10. For 40 years I was angry with that generation, and I said, these are people whose hearts go astray, and they have not known my ways. I read that and I think, well, how can you be angry with someone if they don't know? And then you go back and think of, know the history, and of course you know that this is dealing with God's people because they refused to go into the land of Canaan and take it. And God said, for every day that you sent spies into the land, every day that those spies were in the land, you're going to wander for a year until all of the men from 20 years old and upward are dead. And this is what this is dealing with. And so you ask, is it reasonable to hold somebody responsible for something they don't know? And the only way that you, I think, can logically give an affirmative answer to that, yes, it is reasonable to hold somebody responsible for something that they don't know, is if they should have known it. If the evidence was made plain to them repeatedly, as obviously will be the case here. Is it reasonable to punish a child for doing something wrong if they say, I didn't know? Well, does the situation change any if you repeatedly warned that child about that and you told that child what was going to be the consequences if they went ahead and did that? They went ahead and did it. You're about to punish them and they say, I don't know. Does that hold water? If you told them over and over and over, don't do that, and what was going to happen if they did. And so it's possible that a person can put themselves in a situation where they don't know because they don't want to know, or because they refuse to listen and refuse to heed. The disciples came to Jesus and asked, why do you speak to the people in parables? And he said, This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, you will ever be hearing, but never understanding. You will ever be seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. And I took a moment to look up that word callous and what it means, and it literally means to grow thick. And so the translator got the idea of skin that grows really thick, and we call it a callous. And it's a good illustration. But he says your heart has grown really thick, and it also can be used to mean to grow fat or to grow large. They hardly hear with their ears. They've closed their eyes. That's why they don't hear. That's why they don't see. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. Matthew 13:10-15. Have you noticed in life that there are some people who constantly, consistently argue with the scriptures? That whenever there's something that's presented, then instantly their mind goes to why that can't be true and what all the exceptions and what the loopholes might be that would keep them from obeying that. They're unwilling to allow God's word to change their belief in life. They have a certain belief, a certain direction, a certain agenda, and nothing God says is going to change that. You ever known anybody like that? Sadly, I think we probably all do. And you need to know that that's an attitude that makes God angry. Look back at the text of Psalm 95, beginning in the latter part of verse 7. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart, as you did at Meribah, as you did that day at Massa in the desert, where your fathers tested and tried me, though they had seen what I did. For 40 years I was angry with that generation. I said, there are people whose heart goes astray, and they have not known my ways. Why did they not know God's ways? God had blessed them over and over and over again. Less than 2 months prior to this incident that he's going to refer to, they had come out of Egypt walking on dry land across what had been a sea of water. And the walls of water stood up on both sides of them. And in such a short time, they argued with God. God had blessed them over and over again and supplied everything they need. And now they got to a point where they didn't have water. And God was angry with them because he had revealed himself to them repeatedly. They had refused to submit to his teachings and commands and instructions. He had given them every reason in all the world. And even reasons, I think it'd be reasonable to say, beyond this world to trust him. And yet, they refused. And this reference here to Meribah and Massa, this goes back to Exodus chapter 17. Whenever they were quarreling, and that word quarrel is what the Hebrew word Meribah means, and Massa means tested. And so when they got to this place, when they left, they gave it both of those names, quarreling and testing. And God goes back and refers to that. In today's vernacular, we would say, when God didn't respond to their felt needs, then they rejected God. When he didn't give them what they wanted when they wanted it, then they rejected God. As God looks into your heart, does he see an argumentative attitude? Or does he see a submissive attitude? Does he see an attitude that is determined to do things your own way? Are you willing to surrender your will and do things God's way? Does he see hostility whenever things don't go your way? Does he see anger from you whenever things happen that you don't understand in your life? Then ask yourself this question when that happens, when you feel some of that coming up in you. Has God given me reason to trust him? Really? You need to answer that question. Has God given you reason in your life to trust him? If he has, then we need to surrender and realize that he says, don't harden your heart, but listen to his voice. And we need to pray for understanding God's ways and use your eyes and your ears and keep them open to learn God's way. That's why some today reject God, because they refuse to understand and submit to his ways. So at this point, I would like to sing a song with you. Let's turn to number 620. 620. And I'm going to rush in where angels fear to tread, because I'm not a song leader, but I always kind of like being up here and hearing you sing, because you get the full impact of it here. So how many of us know this song? Let me see your hands. Okay, about eight of us, or seven or eight of us. Okay, well, sing out good and loud and make me look good, okay? We'll sing kind of slowly here. To start out with. Teach me thy way, O Lord, teach me thy way. Thy guiding grace afford, teach me thy way. Help me to walk aright, more by faith, less by sight. Lead me with heavenly light. Teach me thy way. I proved it to you by getting it too low, didn't I? When I am sad at heart, teach me thy way. When earthly joys depart, teach me thy way. In hours of loneliness, in times of dire distress, in failure or success, teach me thy way. When doubts and fears arise, teach me thy way. When storms o'erspread the skies, teach me thy way. Shine through the cloud and rain, through sorrow, toil, and pain. Make thou my pathway plain. Teach me thy way. Long as my life shall last, teach me thy way. Whene'er my lot be cast, teach me thy way. Until the race is run, until the journey's done, until the crown is won, teach me thy way. Maybe we can get somebody to lead that song sometime that is a song leader. It's a beautiful song, has a beautiful message to it. One of my favorite songs. But so Psalm 95 says, God said of people, they shall never enter my rest. And then Psalm 91 is the next one, demonstrates an attitude the people did that caused God to say in verse 14, I will rescue him. I will protect him. He will call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him with long life. I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. That's the person I want to be. That's the way that I want God to think when he looks at me. This is a person that I'm going to take care of. If I know that God feels that way about me, I can be content with whatever situation I face in life. If I really know that God feels that way, I can let God have his way in my life, and it calms my struggling heart. God's attitude toward this man, like those in Psalm 95, is based on their attitude toward him. What was this man's attitude? Look at verse 14. Because he loves me, I'm going to do these things for him. Not long ago, one of my grandchildren came and crawled up in my lap. And some of them are getting just about too old to do this now, but or at least they think they are. Came, sat in my lap for a few minutes and looked up at me and said, Papa, I love you. Now, that helps me understand why God says, because he loves me, I will rescue him. What would I do for that child? What would I not do for that child? That'd be the short list, wouldn't it? That's right. David made mistakes in his life, didn't he? He was in some really difficult situations. He did some things that he shouldn't have done. He did some wrong things. In fact, he did some downright horrible things, didn't he? He was an adulterer. He was a murderer. And yet, he loved God. And he demonstrated that love for God. He demonstrated that love for God in every way, even in the way that when God sent Nathan the prophet to him and told him that he was the sinner, then he was immediately convicted and became contrite in heart, didn't he? And he demonstrated his love for God in acknowledging his sins. God always forgave him. God always rescued him. Not in the moment. God left him in some hard situations for a while, but he always rescued him and he honored him. And he not only honored him, but he honored his children and his grandchildren because of his faithfulness on down the line. Why? Because David loved him. And David was content to let God do things his way. He didn't take matters into his own hands. And that constantly amazes me. Whenever God delivered Saul into David's hand on more than one occasion, then he said, I'm not going to raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. David had no agenda except God's agenda. He had the same attitude as God's only begotten son, who said, I've not come to do my will, but the will of him who sent me. And God said about that son, he pleases me. I love him. This is my son whom I love, with whom I am well pleased. Why was he pleased with Jesus? Because Jesus loved him and surrendered his will to him. You understand? And my point in this lesson is that your attitude toward God determines his attitude toward you. Or let me say it another way, and maybe this is a little bit dangerous, and you may have to think about this a little bit, but I've thought about it a long time, and I don't know of any reason to back off of it at this point unless you give me some reason to. You can motivate God. You can motivate God about how he feels about you. Now, think about those two things and see if that doesn't fit. You can determine how God feels about you, whether or not he's going to be angry with you and say, he'll never enter my rest, or whether or not God will say, I'll rescue him. I'll take care of him. I'll always be there for him because he loves me. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth, David said. Give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name. I will praise you, O Lord my God, with all my heart. I will glorify your name forever, for great is your love toward me. David knew that, didn't he? David knew that God loved him. And how can you keep from loving someone who loves you? So, do you ever doubt God's love? Do you find yourself striving with God? Are you angry about injustices in your life? Sit down, close your eyes, and look at the cross. How can you not love someone who loves you that much? John, the disciple who called himself the one whom Jesus loved, will write, we love him because what? He first loved us. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish. But what? have everlasting life, right? Maybe the most loved passage in all the Bible. God has given you every reason in the world and reasons out of the world to love Him and to trust Him. Isn't it time that you surrendered your life and your will to Him and let His agenda be your agenda? Let His love penetrate your heart and make a difference in your life? If you're not a Christian, you can be one today. You can join just like that 3,000 the first time the gospel message was preached. Then people responded in mass because their heart was touched, because they realized that God truly did love them and that God was powerful. And if you're struggling with life and you really do love God, you need to let Him know. And you let Him know by loving Him enough to do what He tells you to do, to obey Him. And so we make a decision in our life about how God is going to feel about us. We influence how God feels about us. How should God feel about you tonight? Are you fighting with God? Are you struggling with Him? Are there things that you know that He's taught you to do, that He's put in front of you, that you just haven't surrendered your will yet? It's still too important to you in your life. God wants you to surrender your will to Him, and He'll take care of your life, and He'll give you eternal life. And we have that opportunity tonight while we stand and sing. Won't you come?